Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 121 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Visit their gorgeous roster of artists at saatchiart.com, or pop over to limited.saatchiart.com to see their new lineup of limited edition prints. Fancy, because there's only so many of them, and more affordable than originals. Win-win. So today I'm talking to an artist that I first wrote about way back in 2011. I have a thing for old houses, and clearly, so does American artist Seth Clark. He does huge, multi-layered collages of houses and buildings that are completely falling apart, and they are gorgeous. I also just noticed, thanks to Instagram, that he started doing sculpture not so long ago. Also gorgeous. I have a lot of questions about where he finds all of those scraps of goodness, and I also really want to know if he's been building stuff since he was a kid. So, let's find out. Calling Seth in Pittsburgh. Hi, Seth.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? It's so cool that we are finally talking to each other.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, I met one of your friends.
Oh, who?
Remember the... Oh gosh, now I can't remember his name, but I met him in New York at the Architectural Digest show, and he does tapestry type work.
Yeah, Terry Boyd?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that was really funny, because I think I had just written about you not long before I met him, and so anyway, there was that small world thing, but I've never actually talked to you, so here we go.
Yeah. Are you heading to Architectural Digest this year?
No. Are you?
Okay. I am.
Oh, that's exciting.
I'm going to give it a shot. Yeah.
Are you setting up a booth?
I am. I heard from Terry and a few other studio mates that it was a good experience for them, so I'm going to give it a shot.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, I wasn't there as the Jealous Curator. I was there with my day job, and so... But there were so many amazing art booths. So that's really cool. Good for you. Is that in March?
Yeah, it's late March.
Well, it's super intense. Okay, here's my tip, although they've probably told you. Make sure that you have boxes to repack your stuff in, because they take your boxes away and you may not get them back.
Okay.
To
bring everything back home?
Yeah, because you get there with all your boxes. And you unpack everything and you set up your booth, but then they take the boxes away so that it's pretty.
Sure.
And you label all of your boxes to get them back, but then you don't always get all your boxes back. And then it's time to clear out your booth and you have no boxes to pack anything. And all the pros around us, because it was our first year, all of the pros around us had a secondary set of boxes that they brought. And we were like, oh, more boxes.
Okay.
So that is my gift to you.
Yeah. I'll make sure to store everything in the van.
Yeah, there you go. And or maybe you'll just sell everything and you won't need any boxes.
Yeah, that would be great too.
That would be even better. So hopefully you won't need that second set in the van. Anyway, see, I told you, tangents. Okay, so I always like to go back and hear about what people were like as kids. So I don't know. Were you chopping up wood and hammering things together? What was going on when you were a kid?
I was definitely active, I think, as a kid. My mom always tells me when I was really young, I never sort of touched a pencil or anything.
Oh.
I had an older brother, 3 years older, who is also, he was very creative and talented. He's in business now, not in the arts, but I think... Maybe I was just watching him and sort of, she said, I definitely waited until I could draw something, oddly enough.
Huh. I wonder if you just thought it was his thing or something.
Yeah, maybe. I was just waiting until I could do what he was doing.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. But as soon as I did pick up that crayon, I was definitely fully immersed.
Yeah. Were you handy? Like, could you, because that's what blows me away about all your work, is you clearly have to be pretty handy. So like when you were a kid, were you like a Lego kid?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I love Legos and blocks and things like that. And I think I was building things to an extent. I definitely wouldn't even today consider myself very handy.
You're handier than I am, I'm sure.
But I was strongly supported to take art classes and really loved, and throughout elementary school, loved art class and making anything I could make.
Mm-hmm. Even through high school, were you doing it through high school too?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and what was your thing, drawing or painting?
All of it.
I think
exploring, but it was probably mainly 2D.
Yeah.
It's only sort of recently that I've been getting into sculptural three-dimensional work.
Oh, they're so good, and we are going to get to that because I just saw them on your site the other day. I was so excited that we were going to have this conversation. High school is great for that. I'm from a small town, but we had a pretty good art program when we got to try, we had a little dark room and a printing press, and so you kind of get to try a little bit of everything. Did you just kind of know that you would go to art school?
I wasn't sure. I actually grew up in a little town called Seekonk, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's right over the border. It's about a, 10 to 15 minute drive to RISD,
mm-hmm.
College. And that was sort of always in the back of my mind. I love the arts, and I eventually ended up going there for graphic design. But honestly, growing up, I never really thought that was going to be where I'd end up.
At RISD or in graphic design? Or both?
At RISD.
Yeah.
I always had an interest in design, and I think I sort of swayed a little more towards when it was time to make a decision into a major or a college. I was swayed towards, I think, doing design.
Yeah.
Versus painting.
Did you want it? Like, was RISD your first choice? Or, because sometimes kids are like, if it's like right there, then they want to go to UCLA because it's on the other side of the country.
Sure. I was certainly a little worried about going to school so close to home because I wanted to explore a little bit. That's a big reason why I moved to Pittsburgh, although Providence is an awesome city.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt like the best school. Their foundation year is so amazing, or it was for me, in terms of having that interaction with 2D and 3D and sculpture. I don't know. All you're just grounded so heavily into the arts, depending, no matter what major you're going into.
Oh, I was just going to say that. So even as a graphic designer, you do that foundation year.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it certainly influenced me. I took amazing sort of fine art classes that first year of college and went into graphic design, but was always waiting, I think, to get back into the fine art.
And so did you graduate as a graphic designer then?
I did.
And did you go and work as a graphic designer?
I did. I've been freelancing. Maybe about a year ago, I gave up my last design gig.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. I never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
How do you feel not doing it?
Website.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's weird, right? Because I was the same way. You sort of live this double life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of nice when you finally are able to go, no, I'm just going to have one life.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think there's a part of me that sort of misses the client work and solving other people's problems and having a pretty straightforward, solution that you can end with versus dealing with your own issues and being your own critic. But
yeah.
I'm sure you know all about that.
Oh, yes. I know. And that's the thing I always say, like with design work, I obviously put all my effort in, but at the end of the day, it's not your problem, right? Like you solve it for somebody else, but then there's that emotional distance that you can have. But yeah, when you're knee deep in your own work, it's sometimes, yeah, there's not that, there's no detachment. It is you. And right. So, but the nice thing with design too, I always think, cause I stopped about a year and a half ago, but it's always there. Like you can always pick up a freelance thing here or there if you want to, either because you miss it or for a little bit of cash, or, you know, it's kind of a nice career to fall back on. Like it's always kind of there.
Yeah, certainly. And it definitely helps me in terms of knowing how to market myself and taking care of website and postcards and all of the materials you need to create as an artist. Oftentimes you need to do those things yourself. So
yeah. Well, and it saves you a lot of money if you can do it yourself.
For sure.
And so when you graduated, were you doing your own fine artwork at the same time that you were, like, did you freelance right out of school, or did you have a 9-to-5?
I graduated in 2008, mm-hmm. I think, and moved to Pittsburgh shortly after and applied for a lot of design jobs, but I didn't get any.
That's the recession year. Yeah. That was the really 2008, 2009 was a really bad time to graduate.
Yeah. I also think my portfolio, I was really interested in making beautiful things and not necessarily client appropriate things that were getting the message across. So I applied to a lot of design jobs and didn't end up getting into the firms that I wanted in Pittsburgh, and sort of worked a lot of odd jobs and did things here and there until I built up enough of a clientele to be freelancing full time. But that was maybe over four years or so.
Okay. And while you were doing that, were you also making your own artwork, or were you just concentrating on design?
Yes, I was making a lot of artwork in whatever attic or basement I was in, and showing sort of, it was a new city, right? And
yeah.
I can't imagine moving right now and sort of having to reestablish that network, and it takes years, but slowly trying to build a body of work and understanding what my art was going to be, because I didn't leave college having a clear understanding of what I wanted to make. But so certainly working on my art that whole time as well.
And so when you were at school, so you do that foundation year and then you're in graphic design, but do you still get to do fine art courses as electives?
Yes.
Okay. Is that where you sort of discovered collage, or what were you doing there?
I took some printmaking and sculpture classes and, definitely experimented even within my graphic design projects with sort of alternative methods of doing things. So I was really able to explore other, get off the computer and explore materials and learn what I was attracted to in that way.
And so was there anything that you were doing there that is anything remotely like what you're doing now? Was there the beginnings of it or not at all?
There were definitely the beginnings of it. I mean, even in foundation year, that first year at RISD, I was exploring collage, and I remember having a great professor, Bryce Hobbs, who sort of really encouraged us to collage and use alternate materials and just draw, 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 and tape tons of papers and weird things together. So one of the projects I did was make about sort of a room. It's probably the biggest collage I've ever made. And it was maybe 8 by 10 feet or something.
Wow.
Just this giant, huge, taped together monstrosity that was based off of, an 8 by 10 inch light box that we made.
Wow. Did you love it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
For sure.
That probably planted the seed.
Yeah, I think so. And I was always throughout my time there collaging, you know, with type and and doing that sort of thing.
And so were you, once you got introduced to that, did you sort of start collecting stuff? Because your pieces are filled with so many things. I want to come and see your studio because I can't even imagine the boxes and like all the stuff. So did you start collecting little bits and pieces then?
No. My studio is a mess, Danielle.
I know, that's why I want to come see it.
Actually, this is sort of a good starting point of where I began doing what I'm doing now, which is when I moved to Pittsburgh, I didn't have any money. I was looking for work, and I was interested in collage, so the easiest materials and the cheapest that I could find were pieces of trash on the ground and all this weird, already aged sort of ephemera and scraps. So it was a really easy thing to work with. And also the textures and the history of, you know, some backside of a poster that you find that's been driven over for weeks is just a beautiful object in itself. And this sort of material, I think, led me towards houses, and because they're also so textural, and sort of led me to that application and subject matter in a way.
That's so smart. And shows that you have like the true eye of an artist, that you see that poster and go, yep, I'm taking that home. I'm going to stick that thing to something. And so, yeah, that was one of my questions. Like, why all the decaying architecture? Did that come from moving to Pittsburgh and or was that always there?
I think I've always been fascinated in the architecture. It's buildings and architectural elements are sort of the largest things we create as a species, right? So and not being able to control the way these things age permanently over time is sort of fascinating to me. And along with that, I've been doing this work for so long. I think I go through all different types of phases with my relationship to the subject matter. But sometimes it's the notion of preservation. If I'm, you know, frustrated, maybe it's more about a dystopian ruin. And I also think, getting back to 2008, I started this body of work during a major housing crisis and recession in the U.S. So there's sort of a political flow to the work now. Also, that you can, or a chronology where you can sort of track that. And the work I'm doing now is sort of heavier and more corporate buildings.
Because the work, the first time I wrote about you, it kind of feels like, during the whole housing thing when so many people were just abandoning their houses because they had to foreclose and that was sort of it. And there was all of these houses and all of these neighborhoods that were just empty. And that's kind of the feeling. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but that was the feeling that I got, probably because of the timing.
Yeah. It's definitely something I was thinking about and sort of, you know, I think trying to understand the history of what a space has inside it, the people that live there and the lives that occurred inside an old abandoned house.
Mm-hmm. I know. I love that too, actually, that it's the stories of the people that we live in a 100-year-old house, and I am so curious about the families that lived here before us.
Oh, wow.
Because the structure hasn't changed, right? But families and kids have grown up here and moved on, and it's just, there's nothing, I can't find any documentation really. And I'm so curious about it. Anyway, that's another tangent. But, and so are you still, like, do you still collect found things to be
yes.
in your work?
I do. It's funny because as things have progressed, I've been encouraged to make things a little more archival.
Oh, archival.
But I certainly, it's funny because I have to buy a lot of store-bought papers now, and I'll often paint and texturize the paper that I buy and do little things before I cut it up.
But yeah.
But still sort of the last layer of my collage it are these nice little scraps of trash I find on the walk to studio.
So do you always just have a backpack with you that you can shove stuff in?
Just dirty coats, I guess.
I love that. And you're keeping the streets clean.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. that is actually really hilarious, the archival thing, because, like, your work will now, because it will probably last longer than the houses that are falling apart. Because you're having to, like, be conscious about the things that you're using.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic. Well, I don't want to, I'm very excited to be able to do this post, because then, I mean, I love the close-ups of your work. Like, I love the, you know, get the shot of it. But then the close-ups are just crazy because there's so many things layered and layered. Do you have a plan going in, or do you just, like, is it more organic? Are things just layers going on?
Sure. I often plan things digitally, especially with the larger pieces.
Mm-hmm.
All sort of collage photographs I've taken and photographs I've found, sort of a window from this image and a door from here and part of a collapsing roof from another. So the larger scale pieces, I will plan pretty thoroughly to know that the composition is going to be successful.
Right.
But the smaller things, I can sort of just go for it at this point since I've been working with these shapes for so long.
Yeah. What's the biggest piece you've done?
Biggest is maybe, I want to say it's a 6x12 piece. It's down in the Contemporary Craft Museum down in the Strip District in Pittsburgh right now.
Wow. Did you make it there or did you make it? How did you make
I
it in your
it
studio?
In my studio. So it's a triptych. The largest I work is 4x6 feet.
Okay.
Because my gallery makes my panels for me, and that's what fits in a minivan. So it's the easiest to transport.
Yes.
I haven't gone larger because I work on wood, so it gets really complicated when I go larger than that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. With warping and things
yeah.
and transportation. And then so do you go, like a lot of artists tell me, you know, that they'll have a bunch of different things going on at one time so that they can let things dry or if they get blocked, they can move on. So do you have big things and little things going on at the same time?
Yeah, definitely. I usually have, I like to do a lot of things at once. I get distracted easily and so I'm always working, and especially now that I'm doing sculptures as well, it's really nice for me to jump around, and the collage, I don't know, it's just a really different mindset that I can be in. So
yeah, I'm sure.
Gluing little, oddly enough, it's either gluing little pieces of wood to other pieces of wood or gluing little pieces of paper to other pieces of paper, but I certainly am in different mindsets when I do either one, so it's nice to jump around. So I'm at any time, I think I'm probably working on eight or ten pieces at once.
Wow. How big is your studio?
It's not too big. It's big enough. But
do you share with somebody, or are you in there by yourself climbing over stuff?
So I work for a nonprofit and manage a studio building, so we have 25 artists, and
wow.
I'm like so spoiled in this setup because I'm in a way paid to be in my studio, so I manage the artists and make sure our spaces are rented. And it's perfect for me because I'm here, you know, I live a 10-minute walk away and it's really convenient.
Wow, so. That is, you have set up quite the situation.
Yeah, I'm definitely spoiled.
Yeah, that is really smart. And so do you just, is it just your job, like you just go there all day now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm here quite a bit and sort of just, I mean, the job is easy, you know?
Yeah. But then it's kind of nice because you, if you're there, then I'm sort of picturing you like going from gluing little things to safety goggles on and things are getting nailed to something else.
The artists are all amazing. We have a great community here and everybody sort of manages themselves. We just, it's here and there building issues or whatnot, but we have a great environment here.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. See, I really do have to come visit now. And so when did the sculpture start and what was the catalyst? Just did your collages morph into that or was it being around the people in that building?
I think the collages definitely morphed into that.
Yeah, because they're pretty they're pretty sculptural to begin with.
Right, and everything in terms of the layering, I think originally when you look at my older pieces, it was much more drawing heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So the collage was sort of haphazard, and I was really just using it in a way as an underpainting and drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And rendering a lot of the details on top of it. And then over the years, now the way I collage is extremely architectural. Like it's building a building. I'm putting in sort of a foundation and laying down little strips of paper as they would be beams and putting shingles on top of that and whatnot. So I think doing that and transitioning into collaging that way immediately led to wanting to build these things 3D.
Yeah. What was the first one you did?
The first sculpture?
Sculpture, yeah.
Gosh, really good question.
We'll edit out the blank pause and then I'll cut it back together where you're like, actually, it was titled this and then 2000 whatever.
Yeah, so actually... the first sculpture I did was a design project, and it was for Quantum Theater, a great performing arts company we have in Pittsburgh. It's a nonprofit, and they commissioned a bunch of artists to make their logo, which is just this beautiful Q.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sort of assignment called in my head for a sculpture. So I finally ordered all this balsa wood that I wanted to mess around with. And it gave me, you know, sometimes you need those assignments or commissions to dive in.
Totally, yes.
Thing that you've wanted to do for a long time.
When was this?
Gosh, maybe in 2015 or 14. Yeah.
I saw one on your site that looks like kind of like a pile of windows.
Mm.
Is that new?
It may be newer.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think it could be a lot of things.
Okay. I just saw it. It was like, I should have written down the title. See, I'm not very organized. But yeah, it almost looks like a mountain of windows that were all just sort of put together. And it's just stunning because it's your collage work. Now in complete 3D and looks like a little mountain that you could climb. Just so, so beautiful. So have you had a lot of like learning curves to figure out now when, you know, when the balsa wood shows up, how do you know what you're doing?
Definitely a lot of learning curves. I have no idea how to build anything structurally. So
that's why I asked if you were handy and you're like, not really. Like, okay.
I use the lightest wood possible to make these things, which allows for a certain amount of not knowing what you're doing, I think. But I'm also, so I did this amazing residency I guess it's 2 years ago now, at the Pittsburgh Glass Center, and I collaborated with a glass artist to make some pretty heavy-duty, large installations where we really had to dive in and understand how, because the glass was so heavy, we were sort of doing these larger lav, barn-esque architectural forms, and that really made us sit down and figure out some math and call together some much heavier duty, stronger wooden structures so the glass could sit safely inside it. So I'm getting there, and I hope to be able to work on a much larger scale as I learn more and more.
Any mishaps along the way with pieces of glass and random wood? Or did you guys plan it out perfectly?
So the great thing about all of my work is that it's supposed to look broken anyway. So you don't really notice if something's a little out of sorts.
Something hanging off the side. I meant to do that. Thank you very much. That's my statement on decay in the American housing, blah, 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 blah. There you go.
I know you, to some previous episodes, you experienced some glass, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I am an expert now. Mm-hmm. I've blown one ornament that was on my Christmas tree this year. Thank you very much. And then a fairly phallic-looking other thing that I gave to my husband as a paperweight. And then he put it away because he said it creeped him out. So that is where my glass expertise ends. But, I mean, it's intimidating. That's a very intimidating art form until you've mastered it.
It is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was focused more on the casting side of things because I wasn't ready to dive into, you know, 5 or 6 years to understand how to work in the hot shop. So,
but you actually did some of the glass?
I did some of the casting pieces.
And that means that building the thing that the glass goes into?
Yeah, we sort of used frit, which is glass powders, and you put that into a mold, into a kiln, and sort of get it's a grainier effect, depending on what you're looking for. I was able to do that aspect of the glass work, and then worked with Jason Fork, my collaborator, who's much more experienced and extremely talented glass artist, and he was able to do all the heavy duty stuff.
Would you do it? Would you do more glass stuff in the future?
We're still working on some experiments and sort of trying to master some of the things we started out.
Oh, that's cool.
Whenever I have spare time.
And so is there anywhere in your building where you can do that, or do you go somewhere else?
Different location.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's really nice in those. That's why I was wondering, like, if the, you know, the sculpt, I mean, obviously it would come out of what you were already doing, but sometimes, you know, when you're in those shared studio spaces, it's such a cool thing because, you know, you kind of, even if you're just doing your thing, you kind of peek into somebody else's and it's like, whoa, I didn't even know that was a thing. And those community spaces are so great. And then very often, you know, somebody will have a printing press in their studio that you can borrow. And I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing to see, even when you're not really aware of it, I think you're always bouncing off of the artists around you.
Yeah. Well, and just the energy, like people are in there and people are doing stuff and it kind of makes you want to do stuff.
Yeah, for sure. But I wouldn't do very good if I were by myself somewhere. I like to draw from people around me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, and you know, so many artists do kind of, not even on purpose, but end up getting isolated because of where their studio is or their studio's at home. And so, yeah, when you were talking about that, it's so funny. Here comes another tangent for you. Before I started The Jealous Curator, I had this very vivid dream. And when you were talking about, you know, managing this studio, I got a little flash of it. I had this vivid dream that I was somewhere, I don't know, it almost looked like Spain or something, like the stone was sort of golden and the sun was setting, and so the whole thing was really golden, and I was walking through and it was just art studio after art studio, and it was all different people doing different things. And I loved being in there. It was just like the most calming place. And I mean, I hadn't been in art for years. I'd been hiding out in advertising and I wasn't doing art. But it was just, it felt like the best place. And I realized halfway through the dream that I ran it, that this was my place. And I woke up and I was like, whoa, what was that about? And then years later, now I'm like, oh, I think it was the Jealous Curator. Because it sort of feels like what I've built, you know, like featuring all these different artists doing all these different things. And that, you know, now with the podcast, I get to talk to you guys and hear your stories. And now, like, as soon as you said that, I got the flash of this little golden place. And, you know, there's something really beautiful about when artists can actually come together, either, you know, if you're in a small town like me online, or if you're in your situation, like, it's just truly golden.
Yeah.
Tangent.
That's like an amazing, I think, metaphor for what you're doing. I think you're bringing a lot of artists together and helping people realize, oh, they're, you know, artists are people.
Yeah.
We're all having similar sort of struggles within what we do, but really just seeking out our own passions and.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish somebody had told me that, you know, years and years ago. That's why I do a lot of what I do, because I felt so alone for so long, and I just kind of gave up, you know? And so here, like, I would love to have a studio situation like yours. I wouldn't even have to run it. I would just show up. I don't have to be the boss. But yeah, it just sounds amazing and so cool to do those collaborations. And so what are you doing now? Like, do you think your time is 50-50 sculpture and collage, or what's outweighing what?
Well, I think it's probably 50-50 in terms of where my mind is.
Yeah.
But I have an assistant who comes in 2 days a week, and she is amazing. And so much of what I do is really, really time consuming. So she really helps me, and she can help much more with the sculptural works than she can with the collage, because I think I just have built up the collage. I sort of want a little more control over the collages.
Mm-hmm.
Than I do the sculptures. And so more of my time, I think, is spent with the collage rather than the sculptures.
Right. And is it also that, I mean, because do you get commissions and things? Like, if people know you for collage, they're probably coming to you for collage.
Right. I'm definitely better known for my collage works. And also part of it is, so the sculptural pieces, especially the ones I'm excited about and working more and more on, where ultimately sort of destroying them within a gallery or museum space. So, you know, I don't want to work on something for 2 months and then have to take a sledgehammer to it. So it's a lot nicer when somebody else is doing it. But
oh my gosh, yeah. Are you doing lots of installations?
Slowly. It's hard, you know, to, installations don't pay the bills, but it's
right.
What I am really intrigued by in terms of the newer work that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun to take a sort of finished piece of art, which often I'm designing them to be a lot more interesting once they're deteriorating a little bit. So
right.
Sort of looking within and building a structure in the inside that will ultimately be revealed. A few of the sculptures that I've done, we sort of just destroy it within a space and leave the remnants on the ground. So it's a nice little playful mystery in terms of you know, the performance behind that. Or
wait, you actually do take a sledgehammer to it?
Yeah, sometimes.
And wait, do you do it, or did you say other people do it?
Usually it depends on how I'm feeling that day, but and often it's this fun little balance of, you know, you right now will certainly sort of destroy something and then piece it back together so it's a little bit intact, or, you know, managing the difference between, I don't know, even with my collages, I think I'm zooming more and more into how things fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so with this collages and sculptures, it's a matter of having things on the brink, you know, and playing with that tension of when is the right time to, you know, is this thing about to totally fall apart, or is it put together? So a lot of the time it is physically breaking something in the space and then sort of gluing bits and pieces of it back together.
Wow. I thought you were joking, and then no. Wow. So is that like a performance as part of the, when you have a show? Like, do people gather around for when that's about to happen?
Not yet.
Do you want that to be the?
It would be fun, maybe. Maybe like smaller private events, but.
You know what would be so right now, interesting to see is strangers. Like
I need to control it a little more.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's so funny. Who was I talking to? Oh, Dan Lamb. I talked to her the other day, and she does those drippy sculptures that are, they look squishy. Well, some of them are squishy. But she's like, people always want to touch them. So she puts two of them at the door so that people are allowed to touch those, but then they're not allowed to touch anything else. It just takes that, you know, that urge away for them. But she's like, some people, even the squishy ones that you're allowed to touch, people are terrified to touch them because, you know, you're not supposed to touch art. Like, it would be so hilarious if you just gave some visitor a hammer and go, here, go smash that.
Yeah.
People wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah. I think that would be a blast.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'll come to that and then go. No, I'll go see your studio and then I'll go to that.
Okay.
I don't think I could hold the hammer, though. I don't think I could do it.
You can come to my studio. I'll give you something to hammer.
Okay. And see, I'm the perfect person to be on the brink because there's a very real chance that even if I tried to build something that would stay together, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
I am the, like, so not handy anyway. But, okay, so when you're going to the Architectural Digest show then, are you bringing smaller collages? What are you bringing with you?
That's a really good question that I'll need to.
You've got about a month and a half to figure that out.
Yeah, seriously. It's going to be a mixture of work. So one of the reasons I'm doing Architectural Digest is because I really want to sort of, it's almost every sculpture I make, they tend to be a lot smaller, maquettes or, I don't know, iterations of things that I want to make gigantic.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm hoping to meet, you know, some designers and people who might be able to make that happen.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's so smart. And now it's out loud on the podcast, so hopefully they will go there looking for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think so. The sculptures, I'll have a lot of fun talking to people about those, and then just continuing with the collages, so I'll definitely have a lot of collage work there, too.
Oh, that's so good. I wish I was going to be there to see all of it. You're going to love it. Are any of the studio guys, are they going with you? Or are you on your own? Or
My friend Nicole Ryan is, she did it last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think Terry's doing it this year.
No. Did he have a booth, I wonder, when I was there?
He did.
Oh, he did. Okay. Yeah. It's really cool. I was over in like the home goods section, but I wandered through, I couldn't stop myself from going through the art section, and it was just insane, like just amazing work there. So you're going to love it.
That's huge.
It is. It's super overwhelming. Yeah. And especially when you're setting up, because you have no visual landmarks. Like once you've been there for a couple of days, like you remember that you're supposed to turn left when you get to these sculptures and you turn right when you get to the lamps, you know, but when you first get there, when you're setting up, it's just this maze of nothing, just these big white walls that everybody's given. And you're like, oh God, I'm looking for S11 anywhere. Anyway, once it's all set up, it's beautiful. And the people that come through, I saw Susan Sarandon. Who else did we saw all sorts of people. So yeah, you're going to have an amazing time. I'll watch your Instagram feed and see who you meet.
I hope I have time to Instagram on there.
I know. It's a bit overwhelming, but is your assistant going to come with you and help you with man the booth with you? Or will Nicole?
No, Nicole will be there with her booth. And
are you guys near each other, or do you know?
I think we're relatively close.
Yeah.
So we might be able to give each other breaks, but my girlfriend's also coming, and she'll be visiting with friends mostly, but I'm sure she'll give me some relief when I need it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're going to have a great time. It's a really cool event. Maybe I'll go back one day for art instead of day job. This was back when I was still designing. So it was, a different angle. It'd be fun to go as a jealous curator.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So anything else that we should tell people that's coming up aside from that?
Sure. March is a busy month for me. I'm working with Gallery Bomb, BOM, in Boston. And I have a solo show opening there on March 2nd.
Oh my gosh.
And then a week after is Art on Paper.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
I've never been there myself, but, my Philly gallery, Paradigm Gallery, represents me there.
Okay, I've heard that that's amazing.
Yeah, it's. We didn't know. We had to sort of ask permission to show my work because it's on wood and not paper, but it's made out of paper, and we got cleared for that a few years ago. So, yeah.
And are you going to? Are you going to that?
Architectural Digest. I don't it's up in the air if I'll make it to New York before Architectural Digest, because I have to be there for a week for that show.
Yeah.
So.
And you have to make a lot of stuff before you get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that is a busy month. What are you going to do in April? Just sit still?
Yeah. That's probably what I'll do.
Just stare straight ahead. Oh, my God.
I gave myself a few months to relax and sort of experiment in the studio before I have any more deadlines.
Yeah, good for you. Oh, that's amazing. Well, I'm getting you at a good time. This was perfect. Well, good. I can follow all along, and I'm going to post all of this stuff so that people can go to those galleries and check you out, and designers, keep your eye open at Architectural Digest. So, of course, you've listened to a few episodes. You know that the not-so-speedy speed round is the crescendo.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay, they're pretty easy. My golden number one go-to, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Yay.
Right now.
Oh, nice. I didn't have time with the whole picking up of the kid. Didn't have time to get my extra cup of coffee.
Oh,
tear.
No.
I know. I'll get it after. Okay, first summer job.
Oh, gosh. It was either painting houses. Like exterior painting, or maybe babysitting, I don't know.
Oh, well, painting exterior houses makes it all kind of come together there, Seth.
Yeah, when I first moved to Pittsburgh, I was cleaning out old houses.
Did you take stuff?
Gutting and stuff. I would definitely take materials when I found them.
That's a perfect job.
Yeah,
shingles.
It's really nice.
Yeah, yeah. That's really good. I got a job as a house painter one summer. I didn't even make it to the first job. I quit, but I was just like, you know what? I just finished my BFA. I could not get a job to save my life. And a friend of a friend was like, oh, you went to art school, right? Do you want to paint houses? And I was like, oh, God. And I said, yeah, I took the job. And then I was like, no, I can't. I can't do it. And I'm also afraid of heights, so I don't think ladders would have been good for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have a treehouse growing up?
No. I had a big tree in the back of my yard that we would climb sometimes, but, I don't think it was adequate to...
Couldn't have had a structure in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You never get into that.
See, I was picturing you and your brother with, like, hammers and randomly, like, building things that look like your work now. That
yeah,
it's not safe for children to go in.
Yeah.
Okay, and if you could go anywhere in the world right now, you could just be transported there. You don't even have to fly or anything. Where would you want to go?
I think I would go visit my niece and nephew, who I don't see enough. They're out in Iowa.
Oh, that's so nice, Uncle Seth. How old are they?
Almost 1 and 3.
Oh, that's nice. I have my nephew's about to turn 3 on the weekend. They're so cute, and they change so fast, so that's a good pick.
They are.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing so much, but, I think in April, that'll be a plan.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Do you Skype with them?
I do.
It's so, so funny to Skype with kids that age.
Yeah, it's, you sort of, I got a little, sort of, for social media, one of those little lens kits for your phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it helps so much having a wide angle and sort of being able to jump around and be more animated to hold their attention.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's work. Yeah, you have to work pretty hard. Last time I talked to my nephew, he was all in it. It was all good. And then he discovered that one of the drawers on the off, they were in my sister's office, that one of the drawers that's normally locked was unlocked. And, and there was rulers and highlighters, and he was just like, what? Suddenly, Auntie Yell was out the window, did not care, and he's going through all the stuff. And then so she said, can you please say bye to Auntie Danielle? And he just whispers, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know what? Fair enough. It's a drawer full of awesome things. I can understand. I'm too busy. I'm too busy. So that's become a thing in our family now. Sorry?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, fair enough, right? There was a highlighter for crying out loud. Who cares about me? And I would put it on there, go visit them, and then if you could just also transport yourself to New York, then you can be there for all the good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This is such an exciting time, and I can't even remember the first time that I wrote about you years ago.
Yeah, it was quite a while.
Yeah, and so it's been really cool to watch you evolve and to see all these things happening for you. And then who knows, I'm sure you'll be doing giant sculptures in front of buildings or in buildings or whatever it is you want to be doing.
I hope.
Yeah.
I have a lot of things to learn before I get there, but I'm excited to do it one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know Janet Eshelman's work? She does those huge nets in cities, like in public places, and they kind of look like sculptural fishing nets almost.
I don't think I'm familiar with her.
Oh, you should look her up. Eshelman, it's Eshelman. And she is basically self-taught, but now she does these crazy installations all over the world, but she works with teams of, you know, architects and engineers and all these different people, and you know, she always says that one of her quotes is that public art is a team sport. And it's just so cool, like, even hearing you talk about the glass guy, and you know, you pull in these different people and suddenly you can do the scale that you want, or you can have these architectural feats that you never would have known how to do on your own. And I totally think all of that is on its way.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
And now I'm going to just sit here and watch.
Well, I've really enjoyed. I'm so happy you're doing the Jealous Curator full time. And that must be amazing and exciting for you.
Yeah, it feels like I feel like I, you know, want to pinch myself, because I'm like, how is this my day to day? I mean, granted, it's been... like you were saying, you know, these things take time and to build up whatever you're doing. And it's been next month, in almost a month from now, it'll be 9 years.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Whew, 9 years. But anyway, I can't imagine doing anything else. So all good. And same to you. You get to leave design behind. There's so many of us that have left design behind. and got
we'll
on.
Come back to it
Yeah.
here and there.
Well, and you're right. Like, it's such a nice thing to be able to pull out. Like, for Architectural Digest, you can design your own cards if you want to. Like, you know, it's such a nice thing to have. And if you ever do need to jump in and do it, it's just there for you to do. So, not a bad net.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I've kept you on here for an hour. Thank you so much for, you must be so busy and have so much to do. So to take the time to talk to me, I totally appreciate it. Good luck with March. And then thoroughly enjoy April.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. And I'm going to be watching via Instagram. And so, yeah, keep me posted on everything that happens.
Will do.
Okay. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye. Okay, New York designers and architects, go find Seth Clark at the Architectural Digest show and make his large-scale sculptural dreams come true. Thank you very much. What a talented, kind, and lovely guy, right? Oh, and he was not kidding. His studio is crazy. I posted a few photos on my site, thejazzcurator.com, along with photos of everything else that we talked about. Oh, those glass and wood sculptures he did with Jason Fork are beautiful. And yep, they're included in the post too. Thank you so much to Seth for taking time out of his super busy studio time to talk to me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting yet another episode. And big high fives to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.